Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams. Hello and welcome to part two of our Under-20 South American Championships preview special. In part one, we went through Group B, Venezuela's group, where they are joined by the likes of Uruguay, Bolivia, Chile and reigning champions Ecuador. Today we'll be going through Group A, the group of the host Colombia, who are joined by heavyweights of the continent Brazil and Argentina, as well as Paraguay and Peru. And we'll be kick-starting the podcast with the hosts, with Colombia. Here to discuss the hosts Colombia with me is Colombian football expert Simon Edwards. Simon, thank you for joining us. As the host, would you agree that you've unfortunately ended up in the more difficult of the two groups with Brazil and Argentina?
I think it is difficult on one side of things, but I think, you know, three teams qualify. It puts all of the pressure on the first two games for Colombia, which are, in theory, the easier games. So they have to start strong. If they get a good result in the first two games, then obviously they're looking in a good position. The next two really probably don't matter so much. So it all comes down to getting a good result against Paraguay, following that against Peru. And then, you know, you've got the big profile Brazil-Argentina games to finish off the group. But I think three teams going through, if they get two good results early, then they should be in a good position. Something against Brazil and Argentina is a bonus. And I think they're in a good spot to go through. But it's a tricky one, yeah.
What's interested me going through the different squads for the tournament is looking at how many players in each squad have got players already playing their football overseas, particularly outside of South America. And looking at Colombia, you've got three in Europe in the form of Alexis Rojas, the goalkeeper at Arsenal, Juan David Fuentes at Barcelona in Spain, and Isaac Zuleta at Getafe in Spain. And then you've also got two MLS players, Juan Castilla, Houston Dynamo, and at Chicago Fire, John Jada Duran. Are your players that are already playing overseas your stronger players?
Well, it's obviously some of them as well haven't been involved in the process for much of the year. For example, Duran is a starting player at Chicago, linked with the likes of Manchester United, top teams in Europe. So he's a very, very good player, and he's definitely probably the star of this team, the striker. Elsewhere, I mean, Alexis Rojas is young, he's 17. He's been with the under-17s, moved up for this tournament. He's very, very mature, very interesting goalkeeper. He's highly rated. Castilla is a good player, but maybe not kind of the first name on the team sheet. An interesting one at Houston Dynamo. And then Juan de Fuentes, we haven't seen that much of over here in Colombia, but is obviously highly rated there at Barcelona. So and then obviously with Isaac Zuleta as well, who's made a good impact and kind of fits the mold of what they're looking for in their number nine. So I'd say Duran is the kind of clear standout. But the others, you know, somewhat unknown for some of the Colombian fans. So it'll be interesting to see how they do and when they come in.
And another thing that was taking my interest, although it's time consuming to calculate, is how many minutes, first team and top division minutes, the players of each under 20 national team are getting heading into this tournament. For Colombia, are most of these players playing in their first team of their respective clubs?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's a few players in the second division. We've got Pedroso at Cartagena, Gustavo Puerta at Bogota, who are playing regularly and are key players. Caravaggio also at Barranquilla. So the guys in the second division are definitely key starters. The guys at like big clubs like Atletico Nacional haven't made an impact in the first team. Marquinhos, Salazar, Ocampo has played a little bit more, but he's a new player at Nacional. So it's tricky, you know, getting the minutes. Even someone like Daniel Luna, who's highly rated, is getting more minutes at Cali. Alexis Manyoma is definitely a guaranteed starter at Cortuluá. But I think it's always that situation, you know, when you have players who are at big clubs, it can be tricky to get minutes. But I'd say the guys in the second division are playing regularly. The Colombian top flight players are starting to get more minutes. And then obviously, you know, Duran, the striker, is a regular there at Chicago.
My penultimate question for you, followers of South American football, particularly at youth level and the national teams, will know that Colombia played at the Toulon tournament, the Maurice Ravel, back in the summer, as did Venezuela. Is this generation, is this team that's now playing in the Sudamericano a continuation?
Yes, I'd say there's a couple of additions that are important. I'd say Duran, as I've mentioned a couple of times, is really important. There's been a few changes. I think with this Colombia group, there's a lot of attacking midfielders, either inverted wingers or number 10s. You've got Luna, Manyoma, Monsalve, Cortes as well has some characteristics of a 10. So there's lots of players. Be interesting to see how they work things. I imagine they'll have a focal point number 9, with Duran likely to be the starter. It will probably be a 4-2-3-1, but with the three players behind the nine interchanging and connecting. So there's a high level of technical ability. The defense has looked a little shaky at times, and there's a couple of absences. Steven Valencia isn't going to be available. He's a big imposing central defender, but there's quality in this side. I think they'll control the game well. They'll move the ball well. There may be some slight defensive vulnerabilities, and I think it will be important to convert that possession into goals and chances.
Excellent. And my final question for you is an obvious one. What are your hopes, or what are Colombia's hopes for in this tournament, particularly as hosts? How far can you see them going?
Yeah, I think there's excitement in Colombia about this tournament, and there is some expectations. There's been a couple of interesting decisions which have dominated the headlines. You know, Thomas Angel, the son of Juan Pablo, was omitted from the squad, and that has, you know, dominated headlines. But overall, the feeling is positive. I think what Colombia will have in their group stage is a chance to put themselves in a good position, and then also a chance to pit themselves against the favourites. So if they get, you know, if they get two good results to kick off, and then they get something against Brazil or Argentina, then suddenly excitement and expectation build. So it's a challenging group, but a group Colombian fans will be keen to watch. And yeah, any reason for excitement and enthusiasm will get everyone a bit carried away. So we'll see how things go.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining me for this bumper edition of the Football English podcast. Really appreciate every time you come on board, because this is your third or fourth appearance now. So thank you very much, Simon.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
Joining us to discuss Paraguay and their chances at the Under-20 South American Championships is Ralph Hanna. Ralph Hanna is the go-to English man for Paraguayan football, so it's a pleasure that he can join us today. Ralph, how are you feeling going into the tournament?
Hi, Jordan. Thanks for having me. It's an interesting time. I think this is a very strong Paraguay team, so I think there's some optimism, but they've been drawn in a very difficult group. So there's maybe a sense of that this could be a very difficult group to get out of. But it's a strong team. I would say maybe it's a team coming off the back of winning the Odesur gold medal last year. So it's a team with confidence. And although missing maybe their star player, which is of course Julio Enciso, who's in Brighton, and he wasn't released for this, I still think there's a lot of quality throughout this squad.
You said about it being a hard group. There's two groups, five in each, three go through. You're with the hosts, Colombia, as well as the heavyweights, Brazil and Argentina. Where can you see you picking up the points to sneak into the final six?
So I think for Paraguay to get through is they're going to be targeting, I would imagine, both Colombia and Argentina to try and pick up some points off them. Paraguay has a good history in the under 20s against Argentina specifically. I was just going back through the ages, and one of their best teams was 2013 that had the likes of Miguel Almirón, Gustavo Gómez, Junior Alonso, all playing in Europe now. And I remember they actually beat Argentina 2-1 in that tournament as they went to the World Cup. So I think they'll be targeting that and maybe hoping to surprise the hosts and pick up some points there. What we remember, the coach of Paraguay at the moment of both the under 20s and the under 17s is Aldo Bobadilla. Aldo Bobadilla was, of course, a coach in Colombia with Independiente Medellin and won the Copa Colombia in 2019. So he knows the country. He knows the players well, as he's been following. He's been following youth football since he was put in charge around, I think, around 2020 in the pandemic. So he's really helped, I think, bring this quite strong generation through to the under 20 side at the moment.
Okay, and you say a strong generation, and the team we missed out when I went through the teams in a group was, of course, Peru. But Venezuela, when we were approaching this tournament initially, because obviously this has been delayed by near enough 2 years now, some Venezuelan football fans sort of saw it as a lost generation, the team that would have played. That was somewhat recovered in the fact that Venezuela entered the Toulon tournament, the Maurice Ravel, for the first time and reached the final. And 8 or 9 of the players that played in the Toulon tournament will form the core of Venezuela's squad for this tournament. Is there a similar sentiment in Paraguay that you lost a generation with the delay, or is this still a strong selection?
Yeah, there was definitely a lost opportunity, and there was a lot of complaints in terms of how long it took for youth football to return after the pandemic, because Paraguay, in terms of the men's senior league, was one of the first to return in South America, but but both women's football and the youth leagues took a lot longer. That said, what Paraguay have done, what they implemented last year, was their under 19s rule to make sure that you had at least an under 19s player starting every game and playing it. And then they asked for like a minimum minutes, kind of accumulated minutes that every team had to include. So that means in this squad, you've got a few players that now have senior experience. People like Mati Segovia Guarani, he's played a lot. Alan Nunez got some minutes in Cerro. The centre back Gilberto Flores at Libertad, he's also played some senior games. And Diego Gomez, who's maybe one of the stars of this team, he's started to break through and has even played for the senior national team in recent friendlies. But he's been quite a key player at Libertad, and they got their chances in senior football because of this rule that insists that under 19s had to play a certain amount of minutes in the Paraguayan league.
And it's good that you touched upon that, because it was something I was looking at yesterday, albeit not in any level of thoroughness. It was the amount of first team minutes accumulated in each of these under 20 squads, and it seems like Paraguay have got a fair amount. Do you think that's something that you know can benefit Paraguay against perhaps what's considered traditionally stronger opposition like Brazil and Argentina?
Yeah, I think so, because what we see with a lot of these players, when there's some players that are brilliant at youth level, reserve level, and then when they have to make the step up to senior football, it's kind of a whole different animal. So then when you have the reverse in this case, with these players that have been playing senior football and playing alongside, you know, people like Roque Santa Cruz and Oscar Cardoso and Marcelo Diaz, all of these kind of players are in the Paraguayan league at the moment. So them now dropping back down to youth football, I think they bring such an important wealth of experience, and that maybe have that kind of extra edge. I mean, another player to mention is one of the few players that we've called up from abroad, which is Diego Gonzalez, who's at Celaya in Mexico. So he's playing, he's been basically a star player in that team in Mexico. So there's plenty of minutes under his belt, and that will be really useful.
Yeah, and touching upon your extranjeros, if you like, Diego Gonzalez in Mexico, and then two in Argentina in the form of Kevin Pereira and Ali Algamara. Who would you say majority, who would you say are the ones to look out for perhaps budding scouts and foreign eyes?
Well, the player that I really like who hasn't got many minutes yet at senior level is Alan Wilk. So Alan Wilk is kind of your classic number 9 striker, but very good back to goal and also running into the channels. And he was a key player in the South American games in Odesur, where they won the gold medal. He was also a key player in all the lead up in terms of the friendlies leading up to the campaign. And so I think you get there really quite a complete striker and somebody who scores goals. And so he's a very key player. And then in terms of in the midfield, I mean, Diego Gonzalez on the wings, but Diego Gomez and Mati Segovia that play more in the middle. Diego Gomez is like, I guess, like more a classic number 8. He's very physical. He's going to do a lot of work, both sides of, you know, both sides of the pitch. And then Matias Segovia is like a really, intricate playmaker, got a great left foot. He's played a lot of senior football now because his talent is so, so high. And so I think with that group of creative players, you've got something really interesting. Then defensively, I like Victor Cabañas. He's at Cerro Porteño. He also hasn't played many minutes, but Cerro, they recently won the reserve league with mostly under 19s players. And Cabañas, he actually went to an academy in Spain where he practiced a lot. Interestingly, he's born in Miami, where I am right now, but he moved back to Paraguay very young. So he's a double nationality player that could, in theory, represent the US as well. But he's very good as a defensive player, but very good on the ball, which of course we're seeing as more and more teams like to play out from the back. This becomes more and more important for your central defenders.
Excellent. A very thorough breakdown from the back line to the front line of Paraguay. Ralph, what do you think Paraguay will consider a successful tournament?
It's a good question. I think the reality is in youth football, results aren't necessarily the most important thing as you're developing players. But of course, what they really want to do is have the chance to go to the World Cup and get even more experience. So I think for Paraguay, if it's not reaching the World Cup, maybe that's too high an expectation. It's definitely getting through this group. I mean, getting through the group, maybe in the third place, that we're really going to have a tough time with Argentina, Brazil, and Colombia. No disrespect to Peru, but I think those three are the ones challenging for the spots. So I think getting through that first round is the main objective. But there's a hope, having won the Odesur, that they feel they're one of the top teams in South America, and so they should be able to get a place in the World Cup.
Excellent. Ralph, thank you very much for joining us. I know it was brief, but with 10 countries to get through, your succinctness is very much appreciated. Thank you for joining us. We have a returnee to the Footvay English podcast, or at least to Footvay English, in the form of Renato the Sun, to discuss Peru and their upcoming under-20 South American Championship campaign. Renato, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Jordan. Before we get over it, I want to give a little introduction to myself in case anybody doesn't know me. It's Renato Vilches, also known as Renato the Sun on Twitter. I handle the Peruvian Waltz like Twitter page, also giving you updates on current events in Peruvian football, including the players abroad and also the domestic league. And I also am a Sporting Cristal fan, so in case you do see me ramble a little bit about Cristal, then you know how the Twitter goes. But yeah, I'm happy to be here to discuss the current situation of the Peru U20 national team and how things could be going for them in the upcoming Sudamericana tournament.
Perfect. Thank you, Renato. There's a couple of interesting talking points in the Peruvian squad, and I'll start off with one close to home, and that's: it looks like you have poached Alex Custodio from Venezuela. He got called up to the recent preparation camps, and he is absent from Venezuela's under-20 squad list, which hasn't officially been released, but has been leaked. So, yeah, Alex Custodio is going to be a player for Peru, at least for this tournament.
Yeah, so it's something that did caught me by surprise. Like, I know that the FFAF has been trying, like, do some good scouting throughout parts of the world, from not just Europe, but also the United States, Argentina, which we'll get into that part soon. But to see that Venezuelan foreign players on the training camp, at least, is quite interesting. Now, personally, I have not seen much of this Alex Custodio kid, but I've heard some good things from Venezuelan based journalists. So I think that maybe if he's included in the final squad, I do think maybe there has to be a big good reason to why he is, depending on if the U20 coach is going to include him on the squad.
And also touching upon, you know, Peru perhaps looking outside the box for players to call up, looking at the call up for the recent preparation camp with the official list yet to be released for Peru, there's two university players, two players playing their football in the United States at university level: Diego Atoya at Irving University, a striker, and a defender, John Cortez, who's at UCLA. What do you make of Peru calling up university players for what is considered a fairly important tournament, considering it gets you qualification for the under 20 World Cup?
You know, it's kind of interesting. For Diego Doya, it's the fact that he just also recently has signed for Sporting Cristal has definitely been an interesting take on. But on one hand, you could be one, someone would wonder, like, is like calling up university based players like worth it, considering that maybe it's like a level compared to the other players who are playing at a much higher level, like in professional football in Peru or like even sometimes abroad, like in Argentina. And that one would want to question the level of university football. But at the same time, like, it does seem also good for the FFAF to at least know that, hey, like, they may be playing in university football, but let's give them, like, the feel of how it is to be in the quote unquote, like, near professional level with the U20s, with the U20 team, where you got a good amount of players, like, such as, like, Genji Cabrera, Matias Lasso, who are played in like in a tournament like the Sudamericana, where Melgar reached the semifinal. So I think both Odoya and Cortez should definitely take this like as a great opportunity, and who knows, maybe they transition well to professional football, and if that's so, then definitely great for their careers and also for the national team as well.
And how do you assess the strength of the under 20 team and the strength of the young generations coming through for Peru's national teams in general at the moment?
You know, honestly, it's like a bit of optimism and pessimism. Like, I will admit, I feel a little worried that half, like a good amount of these players have not made their professional debuts yet. And by the time you reach the U20 level, you have to at least like debut, not just debut, but also be playing consistent minutes for the club level. And fortunately, Peru, with terms of like giving youth a chance, is not really something that really mixes well together, since many coaches are afraid, like, to give like the youth a chance and rather focus more on instant results rather than long-term projects. But at the same time, there are some players that who've been regularly called up to the U20 that have been playing at a high level, not just in like the Liga 1, but also in the Sudamericana, or even in some cases the Libertadores. I already mentioned players from Melgar like Kenji Cabrera or Matias Lasso, but another player that to definitely be looked out on if he's called up to the like to the U20 squad, given that he just had an injury like a few months ago, is Yao Guimardo. Highly rated player Sporting Cristal, and has already scored in the Liga 1 a couple of times, and also has started a Libertadores match last year for Sporting Cristal. I think he's going to be one of the standout players for the U20 team, but even though he hasn't debuted yet and he's formed abroad, but I could definitely would take a look at Catriel Cabellos from the Racing Club Academy in Argentina, considered to be one of like Peru's like U20s like key players from the friendlies, and even like has played with the national teams like from like the very beginning from the U15 level. So I think he's like definitely an eye to keep on, and the fact that the Racing Club staff has been speaking highly well of him just gives me a feeling that he's definitely like going to be our squad player for us. And of course, we also do have like a few other like names that maybe have not like debuted yet in Liga 1, but they have been at least impressing in the reserve level or even like in the Liga 2. One name I can definitely would like to see more is Andre Vasquez. Last year, he played like was a starter for Pirata in the Liga 2, but now he's recently been signed for Melgar. And from what I've seen for him in the U20 friendly, is like, it reminds me a bit of Yoshimar Yotun on the right side, like, dynamic, he's very good on passing, and at times he'll even try to like do make a chance from like a goal scoring chance.
Excellent. And lastly, I wanted to ask you how you think Peru are going to fare at this tournament. You're in what's probably safe to say the tougher group, the host Colombia and South America's heavyweights of Brazil and Argentina, and the other team in the group, Paraguay. And I have spoken to Ralph Hanna for this podcast. And he said, with all due respect to Peru, Peru are a team that Paraguay will look to get points from in order to sneak in as that third place team to qualify for the final stage. How are you looking at the tournament?
To be honest, everything that Peru is involved in, no matter what tournament it is, no matter if it's like a Peruvian club in Libertadores or Sudamericana or even the national team itself, nothing's going to be easy for them. And this is just no exception. It's the fact that the U20 team are going to be in like in the group where you have the two heavyweights, Argentina and Brazil, but not just that, but you also have the host, Colombia. And you even have a Paraguay side that's very interesting with the U20 level. But I think that I do not want to say like be negative on the U20 team. I think they could at least put up a fight. Do I think there's a chance they can like make it to the, like reach it to the knockout stage or to qualify? That is a way to be seen, especially considering that this is a very difficult group. But I wouldn't say never to them. I do think that they're at least they can try their best.
In Group A is another continental heavyweight, Argentina. Here to discuss the team's chances and recent history is Santiago Bowser. Santiago, how are you? And thank you for joining us.
Jordan, thank you very much for reaching me. But yeah, I'm pretty confident in this squad. I think they're a very, very promising group of players.
Obviously, the football feeling in the country is surely at an all-time high at the moment with the senior national team's World Cup triumph. And there's also a Venezuelan angle here for the podcast. Argentina led by Javier Mascherano and Venezuela led by his former national teammate Fabrizio Colaccini. And both teams competed at the Toulon tournament, the Maurice Ravelo, back in the summer. For those that weren't keeping tabs on the tournament, how did Argentina do? Because that's an under-23 tournament. Venezuela's team at that tournament have 8 or 9 players playing again in this under-20 South American Championship. Is it a similar story for Argentina, or is this a continuation of the same generation?
Yes and no, I would add to answer because I think we have to caveat that Maurice Ravelo tournament had a lot of squad members who are part of the what we call the Europibes, the under 20 Argentina players who were born in Europe and who have or could have represented other European nations, who are playing in teams like Real Madrid, Manchester United, Villarreal, Juventus. Out of those group, that group, which includes, the likes of Alejandro Garnacho, who are Argentina's star man at the tournament, Matías Soulé, Lucas Romero, out of all those players, the only one who has been given permission to join the Argentina squad for the Sudamericano is Nicolás Paz, the Real Madrid B attacking midfielder, who was actually pretty good in the tournament, scored 1 goal. But of course, I mean, the star man was certainly Garnacho, and he was the second top scorer at the tournament with 4 goals. He was a real revelation for Argentina, playing his very first few games for the under 20s or for Argentina in any category. And I feel like he will be a little bit missed because of that. As long as well as some of the other players. Argentina actually were a little bit unfortunate to at the tournament because they only lost one game. It was against eventual winners France. But it was a 6-2 defeat, which because of the goal difference meant that Argentina were not one of the better second place teams and were knocked out in the first round. But they did win the fifth place game after that, which I mean, if third place isn't a consolation, imagine fifth place what it's like. But still, I feel like the players who are coming in instead of the Europibes are still players who do have a lot of first team experience, even more so than the Europibes. I mean, granted, the Europibes have to fight for a spot with some of the best players in the world. But I mean, the players who are who Mascherano is bringing in right now have a lot of first team experience in Argentina. You have the likes of Alejo Vélez and Gino Infantino from Rosario Central, who have been key players in Carlos Tevez's squad, even if it's a rather underwhelming squad, but still a squad which has been given a lot of, in which the young players have been given a lot of importance. You have the likes of Julián Fernández, Valentín Gómez from Vélez, Agustín Giai from San Lorenzo, Julián Aude from Lanús. All players who have had a lot of experience. Facundo Buonanotte, who has just been sold to Brighton as well. And Federico Gómez was actually, you can kind of call him a world champion since he was the only sparring in the Argentina squad in Qatar. So he has been, everyone in the squad has been asking him questions about that. What was Qatar like? What was Messi like? So, I mean, even if we don't have some of the more high profile players that have been in the right on the radar for Argentina, we still have a squad that it's pretty competitive and who can do some great things in the Sudamericano, I think.
Yeah, and I've alluded to it in other conversations around the South American Championships for this podcast, but it's probably fair to say Argentina in the tougher of the two groups. You're with the host Colombia, as well as fellow heavyweights Brazil. Paraguay and Peru make up your group. What do you think the ambition is and the limit is of this squad? How far do you think they can go, and what's the expectation? Is it to qualify for the under 20 World Cup?
I mean, I actually got to speak to some of those players because my work has granted me the opportunity to speak to some of those when they were training in the CESA, where the AFA, you know, training camp is. And when I've asked that to some of the players, and most of them actually want to win the whole thing. I mean, they do have their sights on qualifying for the World Cup, and also, you know, for the next Panamericano event, but they also want to win the whole thing. I feel like even if it is certainly a very, very difficult group, certainly with, as you said before, you know, the short end of the stick, it is still a group which Argentina, I feel they do have enough quality and fundamentally enough experience to try and win as many games as they can and actually go far in this tournament. I feel like they do have enough.
And when it comes to the under 20 World Cup, what is the how are these tournaments viewed back home in Argentina? Speaking as an English guy, I feel that, like, unless you're a journalist or you're working within football, the youth tournaments sort of go a bit under the radar. I remember the last under 20 World Cup final, which was England versus Venezuela. And
was that the last one?
The London, the last under 20 World Cup in 2019 because of COVID.
Wasn't that one in 2017?
In when, sorry?
Wasn't the England Venezuela final in 2017?
Yes, sorry. Yes, it was. Sorry.
That tells you the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Sorry. The last under 20 South American Championship was 2019. So when Venezuela got to the final of the under 20 World Cup in 2017, they played England. At the time, I was still living in England. And, you know, even my friends who were big football fans, you know, weren't watching the tournament, and some didn't even know it was going on. What's the attitude towards these kind of tournaments back home in Argentina?
I mean, when you go back a few years, there were Argentines were pretty hyped up for the under 20 tournaments, because I mean, you have to go back 20-25 years, and there was still the Peckerman project here in Argentina. I mean, you Venezuelans or Venezuela fans will be pretty much acquainted with what Peckerman has done in Argentina in the 90s, where he basically set up the national team as it currently is right now. I mean, he gave a lot of importance to developing young players. And as a result of that, Argentina won 5 out of like 7 of the 20 World Cups between 1995 and 2007. Unfortunately, that project was abruptly ended after 2007. In which they won the World Cup with the likes of, you know, Di Maria and Agüero as part of the squad. But since then, the World Cup, the under 20 World Cup, has been one of constant frustration for Argentina. Since winning it in 2007, I think the best result for Argentina was a quarterfinal finish in 2011 from a squad that's out of, you know, all players playing there. The only important national team player that yielded was Nico Tagliafico. Granted, he's a great player, but he's still one out of like 18, which is not a great value. And even from other World Cups, which have given us some great players as well, you know, like Julian Alvarez or Lautaro Martinez in the past, they've really underperformed. They've even struggled to get out of the group. The last time out, they actually got eliminated on penalties by Mali, which was embarrassing. So, I mean, there certainly isn't as much excitement in Argentina about the under 20 World Cup as there was like 15-20 years ago. But given now that Argentina have actually won the World Cup, it feels like now we want to, you know, enjoy it as much as we can. And this is going to be the first national team that will play with the third star on top of their crest. So that's going to be a very important value to drive enthusiasm for this specific under 20 team.
One of the favourites for the tournament will be continental heavyweights Brazil. And to discuss that nation and their chances at the upcoming under 20 South American Championships is Thiago, the founder of Owlstats, a data analytics company specialising in South American football. And Thiago himself is a Brazilian. Thiago, welcome.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks for inviting me.
No, absolute pleasure. As many people may know, Brazil are one of the most successful teams, well, the most successful team at this tournament with 11 titles, but on a bit of a dry spell, having not won it since 2011. How do they look going into this version, this edition of the tournament, Thiago?
Well, we have a few players out for this tournament, the likes of Endrick, the Palmeiras star. We all, Matheus Nascimento as well, because of his injuries. And we have a couple of other players who are out for this tournament. But I still think Brazil are, you know, going to this tournament very strong. As you said, it's, we had a really good history in this tournament, but in the last four, we only qualified for one. And after 2011, we had a great team. But so we need to prove ourselves.
How is the what's the attitude like of the nation in Brazil towards the youth championships? Is it something that the footballing community pay attention to? Do people get excited about this and have high expectations?
To be fair, not as much as they should be. You know, they I think the general population, they don't really pay a lot of attention. But obviously, the football community, that's quite a lot of pressure because there's some, you know, a lot of talent, and especially players who do well in the clubs, people expect them to do well for the national team as well. So so people tend not to pay that much attention, but there's still pressure, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course. And you mentioned the players, you know, doing well for their clubs. Is this an under 20 team that has a lot of players that are already playing first team football?
Yeah, we have quite a few. So we have Artur for America. He had a few games. We have Robert for Corinthians, Weverton for Cruzeiro. I mean, not massive regulars for their clubs, but we have at least three that played a lot of football for their clubs. André Santos for Vasco. André Santos just signed for Chelsea. He's probably one of the biggest talents in Brazil at the moment. He had an amazing season with Vasco, scoring quite a few goals in the Serie B last year. And and also Vitor Roque for Paranaense. Vitor Roque is another amazing player who's just coming up. He played for Cruzeiro last year in the Mineiro State League. And he scored three goals in the Cup and then moved to Paranaense, helps them in the Libertadores. The Brazilian league. So Vitor Roque is an amazing player coming up, and also Savio, who just moved to PSV. He had a really good season for Mineiro as well last year. So yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned Savio at PSV, and you said about André Santos just moving to Chelsea, and a third Brazilian in this squad that is playing their football outside of Brazil is the defender Robert that signed for Zenit. You mentioned Vitor Roque being one to watch out for and being a top player. Are there other players to watch out for in this team, like the next Neymar, the next Casemiro? Who do you expect from this under 20 team for everyone to know about in the next 12 to 24 months?
That's a guy called Guilherme Biro for Corinthians. Very good player. He played under 20 competitions, and he's very talented, a very skillful midfielder. I think he's going to Stenio for Cruzeiro, Pedro Henrique for Corinthians. I think the whole squad, there's quite a few talents out there to watch out for.
And what's the expectation of this generation in this competition? Is it to win it or simply just to qualify for the under 20 World Cup?
No, I believe they're going to win it. We had a tournament in Espírito Santo in Brazil last year. Our stats had a whole coverage for that tournament. Brazil beat Uruguay in the final, 7-0. Sorry. So there's a lot of expectations. There's a few good players there, and I believe people really expect Brazil to go and win it.
Okay, and one final question, because it's a hot topic at the moment. Endrick, who has recently signed from Real Madrid, you mentioned he's he's missing from this tournament. What's the story behind that?
Palmeiras didn't let him go because he's already with the first squad. He's gonna get a few minutes in the Paulista for sure, because last year he already got a few minutes, and there's a lot of expectation on him. I really think he's gonna do really well this year for Palmeiras, so that's why they didn't let him go. It happens quite often in Brazil. So when they start going to the first team, they don't really let them go. We had cases like not the under 20s, but under 17s, for example. Vinicius Junior didn't go to the World Cup in India because he was already first choice for Flamengo before he moved to Real Madrid. So that kind of thing really happens in Brazil because the players made to the first team when they're quite young. So yeah, that's one of the reasons.
Okay, excellent. Well, you've heard it here for the English listeners. Brazil, according to Thiago, are going to win the under-20 South American Championships. Thiago, thank you for joining us.
That's brilliant. Thanks a lot for having me.